Welcome once again, little ones, to today's study, the date being April 26th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time, 1849 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Yes, we're in Eastern Daylight Time. At the end of yesterday's study, I said Eastern Standard Time, but indeed it is Eastern Daylight Time, and we're in the Crucible article, chapter 11. Paragraph 2 in Part 2 of the Crucible of Credible Creed. Pharaoh Hatshepsut died in 1469 BCE, we say, as consistent with a scarab bearing her name. Consistent with a scarab bearing her name discovered by Mr. Garstang between 1930 and 1936 in a Jericho grave, the name of that city Jericho being Tell S. Sultan. As we wrote in Chapter 5, an unpopularity that is believed to have occurred more than 20 years after her death is not adequately early to have caused the removal of this scarab from the grave chamber. Not that anyone would go and remove it, but even if they'd wanted to, wouldn't have been possible because she wasn't unpopular yet. Before Jericho had become a barren place due to the attack of Israel upon it, so 20 years after 1469, is 1449, and longer than 20 years would be after 1449, which is certainly after Joshua came in 1452 in our chronology. Before Jericho had become a barren place already, in other words, by the time she became unpopular, Jericho had become a barren place due to the attack of Israel upon it. By us, the date of Jericho's destruction, 1452 BCE. At that time, soon after Israel is entered into Palestine, the Promised Land is under continual attack by Joshua. And the city of Jericho is foremost in this regard, its entire populace having been killed by Israel at the time. And yet, Rahab and her family were saved. The destruction was of every last, quote, man to woman, young man to old man, bull and sheep and ass, end quote. All were destroyed. Rahab and her family are saved because she had earlier hid the spies sent by Joshua amid the flax drying on her roof. We know that the Bible tells us later that Rahab became an ancestress of Jesus Christ after she married an Israelite. Although the account of Matthew chapter 1 lists Rahab, the wife of Salmon, as living just four generations, in brackets about 140 years, say, end bracket, four generations or 140 years before King David, from Matthew chapter 1, is when Rahab lived. There are really as many as, more than that, apparently, as 363 years. We're going to say that even though Matthew says there are four generations, there are really as many as 363 years from the birth of Rahab's son until King David's birth in 1088 BCE. Were her son born in 1451 BCE, which is the year after Jericho was burned. So the maximum number of years would be something like 363. And 363 is factored as 11 times 11 times 3, with two factors of 11. Interestingly, from the time of Rahab to the time of King David is thus perhaps more like 10 generations. 363 years is more like 10 generations, not 4 generations. More like 10 generations than 4, agreeing with the crucible dating of Joshua as from 1452 BCE, as we say. Okay, so if we want to be consistent with our crucible date for Joshua destroying Jericho, it's got to be more like 10 generations from Rahab to King David, the birth of Rahab's son, to the birth of King David. Since King David was the youngest of 8 sons of Jesse, it is possible that from Rahab to King David comes to only 8 generations if there were several youngest sons or younger sons among those generations, leaving, because then the age of the father at the birth of the son could be older, could be greater. So there possibly there could be only 8 generations, leaving 14 of the 22 generations, say, in the time between Jacob and Joshua, because there are 22 generations from Jacob to King David, according to 1 Chronicles 6 and 33. Possibly could be 2 Chronicles 6 and 33, but I think it's 1 Chronicles 6 and 33 that mentions the generations from all the way down from Jacob to King David's time, and there are 22 of them. So there could be, if there are 8 generations from Rahab to David, that's on the low side, there might be only 8, then there would be 14 remaining from Jacob to Joshua, and that would give a number from the birth of Jacob to the birth of Joshua, 2044 minus 1534, the two birth dates, then divided by 14, which is, if there were 14 generations during that time, an average generation of 36.4 years, which is not a bad average, really, considering they don't have to be firstborn sons. Perfectly fine for the time from Joshua. This is from Jacob, though. That's the problem. This is from Jacob. And so there might be more like, instead of 8 generations, we might have to divide by 12 here and leave 10 generations for the time between Rahab and David, because from Rahab's time, people lived only more like about 70 or 80 or 90, whatever, 70 years at the as the typical age that people live now, or up until recently, people only lived about that on average as far as life expectancy. But the reason, here's the thing. Life expectancy is based on the death of the average person, which includes the death of infants. So by reducing infant deaths, the average life expectancy nowadays has been raised to in the mid-80s or something like that, whereas people don't live any longer. It's just that the average is higher because the babies don't die as often. That's the reason. That's the reason why life expectancy has gone up. It's not because people live longer. You need to understand it. So back in those days, people lived just as long as now in the time of Moses and Joshua, according to Psalm 90, which is about 70 years. And it's typical of us people living today. So therefore, a 36-year average generation appears more reasonable for the time from Joshua to King David. Right? And if that were the case, then it's 10 generations, 363 years. So we continue on with that discussion. Perhaps we'll come back to it later today. That's all for that, for right now, because we've got to begin our reading and see what happens. First, I want to show you this prophecy of Isaiah, children, chapter 7, verse 8. For the head of Syria is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin. And within just 65 years, Ephraim will be shattered to pieces so as not to be a people. Now that was a prophecy given according to the context from the time of the days of Ahaz, which is about starting in 741. And I want to show you the chronological Where are you? There it is. The time of Jeroboam in 784, the eclipse of 784, February of that year, 784 BCE. Jeroboam ran away in that year, which is his after 41 or in his 42nd year, he ran away. And so that's the time from which the 65 years is counted for that kingdom of Israel, the northern kingdom. It's not counted from the time of Ahaz, which is seen to be 741 here. So the 65 years ends in 719. But it makes sense that the 65 years would count from some major signpost or, you know, marker, such as the end of the reign of Jeroboam in the northern kingdom, when he ran away with the earthquake and the eclipse occurring at, as far as we know, they appear to be have been simultaneous, and that's why he ran away. From the book of Amos, we learn about the earthquake and the eclipse, as we've already mentioned. Now, it's perfect, but it says within 65 years, Ephraim will be shattered to pieces. He doesn't say within 65 years from what time period. He doesn't give the beginning of that. They don't state what year this was, nothing. So we have to take it as from some important chronological point, which is, in this case, the most important point seems to be the departure of Jeroboam after his 41 years of reign, and at the time of the eclipse in 784 is when we find that to be best represented. So that is the way that is understood best, or so it appears. Can we now read Nehemiah chapter 2? Okay, I think we can, little children. Here we go. And it came about in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king. Remember, chapter 1, it said in the 20th year, in the month Kislev, which is a month after Nisan. So this is the 20th year now of the king, which is not the same as the 20th year, because it comes after the month of Kislev, Nisan. So it's the 20th year which began in Nisan for King Artaxerxes, but it was contained within the 20th year of the Jewish secular calendar, which began the previous Kislev. So it works perfectly chronologically. In the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, who is identified as Artaxerxes Longimanus, who began to rule in 464 BCE in our chronology and in the conventional chronology too. That wine was before him. It came about that wine was before him, and Nehemiah writes that I, as usual, took up the wine and gave it to the king. But never had I happened to be gloomy before him. So the king said to me, why is your face gloomy when you yourself are not sick? This is nothing but a gloominess of heart. At this, I became very much afraid. On yesterday's discussion about 2 Corinthians 11:14, also, I want to say something. This is a metaphor. Satan himself keeps transforming himself into an angel of light is a metaphor. It's a metaphor for how Satan continues to transform himself. He does it in such a way as to make himself appear to be an angel of light, like a heavenly angel, but of course he's not a heavenly angel, and he doesn't give the true light. But it's a metaphor. That's how we need to understand it. That's the most powerful thing as far as the most powerful way of translating it. It shows how much effort Satan puts into his deception. He transforms himself continually. He's not just like putting on a jacket of a different color or something. It's more than that. Now, Nehemiah was never gloomy. So the king said to him, "Why is your face gloomy when you yourself are not sick? This is nothing but a gloominess of heart." At this, I became very much afraid. Then I said to the king, "Let the king himself live to time indefinite. Why should not my face become gloomy when the city, the house of the burial places of my forefathers, is devastated, and its very gates have been eaten up with fire?" In turn, the king said to me, "What is this that you are seeking to secure?" Because in chapter 1, that was where Nehemiah had been told about the gates having been burned with fire. So this is chronologically after chapter 1, and that's how we know that the 20th year of Artaxerxes begins in the month Nisan, after the Kislev of the 20th year of the Jewish calendar, in which his year 1 begins. So it's the 20th year of Artaxerxes in the Jewish calendar. It begins in the Jewish year which began the previous Kislev. That's how that works. But we know that these events are chronological because Nehemiah was informed about the burning of the gates of Jerusalem. And then chapter 2 says, he tells the king. In turn, the king said to me, Nehemiah writes, "What is this that you are seeking to secure? What do you want to do about the gates being burned?" At once I prayed to the God of the heavens. After that I said to the king, "If to the king it does seem good, and if your servant seems good before you, that you would send me to Judah, to the city of the burial places of my forefathers, that I may rebuild it." At this the king said to me, as his queenly consort was sitting beside him, and some older scholars from less modern times, you know, slightly older scholars or scholars from the previous generation or generations, have thought that this queenly consort must be Queen Esther, and they've identified Esther as the queen and Artaxerxes as the same king mentioned in the book of Esther. But that's not commonly thought today. Today we think it was Xerxes, the predecessor of Artaxerxes, who was ruling at the time of Queen Esther. But the queenly consort was sitting beside him. So because some people think it was Esther, they think that's why he showed favor to Nehemiah, because she was Jewish and Nehemiah was Jewish. "How long," the king said, "will your journey come to be, and when will you return?" So it seemed good before the king that he should send me when I gave him the appointed time. And I went on to say to the king, "If to the king it does seem good, let letters be given me to the governors beyond the river, that they may let me pass until I come to Judah. Also a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the park, that belongs to the king, that he may give me trees to build with timber the gates of the castle that belongs to the house, and for the wall of the city, and for the house into which I am to enter." So the king gave them to me according to the good hand of my God upon me. Eventually, the gates of the castle is something to do with it belongs to the house. It sounds like there's a castle and a house at the entrance of the city. Eventually, I came to the governors beyond the river and gave them the letters of the king. Moreover, the king sent with me chiefs of the military force and horsemen. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant the Ammonite got to hear of it, then it seemed to them something very bad, that a man had come to seek something good for the sons of Israel. At length I came to Jerusalem, and I continued there for 3 days. Then I rose up by night, and a few men with me, and I did not tell a man what my God was putting into my heart to do for Jerusalem. And there was no domestic animal with me except the domestic animal on which I was riding. and I proceeded to go out by the valley gate by night and in front of the fountain of the big snake, and to the gate of the ash heaps. And I was constantly examining the walls of Jerusalem, how they were broken down, and the gates of it had been eaten up by fire. And I went passing along to the fountain gate, and to the king's pool. And there was no place for the domestic animal under me to pass along. But I kept on ascending in the torrent valley by night, and I kept on examining the wall, after which I came back and entered by the valley gate, and so got back, the same gate by which he had gone out. In verse 13, he came back through in verse 15. And the deputy rulers themselves did not know where I had gone and what I was doing. And to the Jews and the priests and the nobles and the deputy rulers and the rest of the doers of the work, I had not yet told anything. Finally, I said to them, "You are seeing the bad plight in which we are, how Jerusalem is devastated and its gates have been burned with fire. Come and let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer continue to be a reproach." And I went on to tell them of the hand of my God, how it was good upon me, and also of the king's words that he had said to me. At this they said, "Let us get up, and we must build." So they strengthened their hands for the good work. Now when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant the Ammonite and Geshem the Arabian learned of it, they began to deride us and look on us despisingly and say, "What is this thing that you are doing? Is it against the king that you are rebelling?" However, I replied to them and said to them, of course, Nehemiah had the permission of the king, and Nehemiah replied, "The God of the heavens is the one that will grant us success, and we ourselves, his servants, shall get up, and we must build, but you yourselves have no share, nor just claim, nor memorial in Jerusalem." They spoke with stronger words than did these opposers, who were satanic by being opposers of God. That's what Satan is, an opposer of God. And they didn't know, these opposers, about the instructions that the king had given, nor the assistance that the king had given to Nehemiah. So there was opposition to the work here, just as many times there are people who oppose. There is opposition of many different kinds to God's work, because in many cases it's jealousy, of course. It's the fact that people don't have time, you know, to think out what they're doing, and their only response is to oppose. Jesus said, those who can make room for it, you know, make room for it. Let those who can make room for the word of God make room for the word of God. That's what Jesus said. One of the many things he said, the wise teacher that he was and the great healer that he was. Malachi chapter 2. And many people of the Jews think that Malachi was in fact the same person as Ezra. Ezra being his family name, the name that he used in everyday business, but Malachi being a pen name, meaning angel, I think Malachi means, or messenger. "And now this commandment is to you, O priests," Malachi writes, if in verse 1 of chapter 2, continuing chapter 2 now, little children, "if you will not listen, O priests, and if you will not lay it to heart to give glory to my name, Jehovah of armies has said, I shall also certainly send upon you the curse, and I will curse your blessings. Yes, I have even cursed the blessing because you are not laying it to heart. Look, I am rebuking on your account the sown seed, and I will scatter dung upon your faces, the dung of your festivals, and someone will actually carry you away to it. And you will have to know that I have sent to you this commandment in order that my covenant with Levi may continue." Just occurred to me today, we don't have to make the E a long E just because the accent is on the E. It could be Levi. It doesn't have to be Levi. just it says in order that my covenant, to be precise, with Levi may continue. Yahweh of armies has said, you will have to know that I have sent to you this commandment in order that my covenant with Levi may continue. Yahweh of armies has said, as for my covenant, verse 5, it proved to be with him, one of life and of peace, and I kept giving them to him with fear. Meaning, giving them the commandments, or the parts of the covenant, and he continued fearing me. Yes, because of my name, he himself was struck with terror. The very law of truth proved to be in his mouth, that is, in Levi's mouth, and there was no unrighteousness to be found on his lips. In peace and in uprightness he walked with me, and many were those whom he turned back from error. For the lips of a priest are the ones that should keep knowledge, and the law is what people should seek from his mouth. For he is the messenger of Jehovah of armies. It's the name Malak. See, so Malachi means messenger. Or in Latin or Greek, it's a word like angel. But in verse 8, you men, you have turned aside from the way. This is a prophecy to the priests in verse 1. You men, you have turned aside from the way. You have caused many to stumble in the law. You have ruined the covenant of Levi, Jehovah of armies has said. And I also, for my part, shall certainly make you to be despised and low to all the people, according as you were not keeping my ways, but were showing partiality in the law. Is it not one Father? Is it not one Father that all of us have? Is it not one God that has created us? Why is it that we deal treacherously with one another in profaning the covenant of our forefathers? Judah has dealt treacherously, and a detestable thing has been committed in Israel and in Jerusalem, for Judah has profaned the holiness of Yahweh, which he has loved. And he has taken possession of the daughter of a foreign god as a bride. So it wasn't that they married foreign women, it was that the women they married worshipped foreign gods. That was the problem with the wives that the Jews had taken. Judah, it says, Jehovah will cut off each one that does it, one who is awake and one who is answering from the tents of Jacob, and one who is presenting a gift offering to Yahweh of armies. And this is the second thing that you people do, this resulting in covering with tears the altar of Jehovah, with weeping and with sighing, so that there is no more a turning toward the gift offering or a taking of pleasure in anything from your hand. And you have said, on what account? On this account, that Jehovah himself has borne witness between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you yourself have dealt treacherously, although she is your partner and the wife of your covenant. And there was one who did not do it, as he had what was remaining of the Spirit. And what was that one seeking? The seed of God. And you people must guard yourselves, respecting your spirit, and with the wife of your youth. May no one deal treacherously, for he has hated a divorcing. So it wasn't just that they took wives who worshipped foreign gods, but they also divorced these wives. You know, many times, many divorces were going on. Jehovah, the God of Israel, has said, and the one, he's hated a divorcing, Jehovah, the God of Israel, has said, and the one who with violence has covered over his garment, Yahweh of armies has said, and you must guard yourselves respecting your spirit, and you must not deal treacherously. You people have made Jehovah weary by your words, and you have said, in what way have we made him weary? By your saying, everyone that is doing bad is good in the eyes of Yahweh, and in such ones he himself has taken delight. Or, where is the God of justice? Everyone saying that makes Jehovah weary. That's the end of Malachi chapter 2. You have dealt treacherously with the wife of your youth, verse 14. Although she is your partner and the wife of your covenant, Jehovah hates divorce, but he also hates the taking of worshippers of false gods as partners in marriage, too. But he hates divorce very much. Judah has profaned the holiness of Yahweh, verse 11. We've only got a minute or so left. 2 minutes. And so let's return to our article now. That concludes our scriptural reading for today. Going back to our Crucible article, part 2, chapter 11, paragraph, it's a long one, paragraph 2. It's very long, so we won't be able to cover it all today, I don't believe, but we can summarize it maybe. So if we change this number of generations, instead of saying 8 generations from Rahab to King David, we say 10, which seems reasonable with a 36-year average, which would be about the same as the average generation even in our days, which is about right, seeing as people live about the same length of time nowadays, except for the fact that the infant deaths has been reduced, so the average lifespan is greater. People don't realize that. It's a deceptive thing when they say the lifespan is now going up and getting greater. It makes it look like people live longer, but they don't. They live longer on average because the infants don't die, but people don't live any longer as a life span. It's the life expectancy that has gone up. The life expectancy, because you don't expect the babies to die as often, but the lifespan is still the same, 70, 80, you know, whatever. People live, or you know, not 80 or 90, but still 70 is a not uncommon age to die in our day. Hopefully that can be made better, right? By not just for infants, but for older people too, by the taking of supplements. That's by vitamins. I'm talking about natural supplements. The conclusion of our study now, it's April 26th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 22 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie, saying bye for now.